This is KABF in Little Rock, 88.3, the voice of the people in Central Arkansas. It's time for Radio Cows, a weekly program from the Central Arkansas Library System. Every Wednesday from 6 to 6:30 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 FM, we'll share with you conversations with interesting Arkansans on primary sources, chewing the fat with Rex and Paul, and much, much more. We invite you to let us know what else you want to hear by contacting us at radiocows@cows.org. This program is presented by the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies and the Cows Communications and Public Relations Department. For more information about Radio Cows, please visit the Butler Center's blog at butlercenter.org. Hello, and welcome to Primary Sources, a featured production of Radio Cows. Here on Primary Sources, we focus on people who are making a difference in Little Rock and Arkansas. Some you might have heard of, and some you haven't heard of, but probably want to know about. Check out cows.org/podcasts for a free podcast of Primary Sources interviews.
This is Brian Robertson, and we are in the Arkansas Studies Institute building doing an interview for the Butler Center's Arkansas Vietnam War Project. Your name, sir?
My name is Jacob Edward Odell III. Most people call me Eddie.
Okay, Eddie. Tell me a little bit about yourself. For example, when and where you were born.
I was born in Little Rock, Arkansas, July 12th, 1950.
Okay. And what were your parents' names?
Jacob Edward Odell Jr. and Ray Ellen Odell.
Okay. And what did both of your parents work, or did just your father work?
My dad worked for the waterworks. Okay. And he spent his whole life working for them. He ended up managing Lake Winona, and then managed Lake Maumelle, where we get our major water supply.
Mm-hmm. Wow, interesting. Did you have any siblings, brothers or sisters?
I had three brothers.
Okay. Now, where did you fall into that?
I'm the oldest.
The oldest, okay. What was that like? Guess you got to pick on them.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I wasn't real nice to my next to the oldest brother, but we made amends through the years.
Mm-hmm. Now, where did you go to school?
Little Rock Central High.
Okay.
I ended up teaching there.
Really?
Years later, taught there for 9 years.
Mm-hmm. So, did you graduate from Central?
Yes.
Yeah. And what year was that? Do you remember?
68.
68. So, what led you to join the service?
My grades were terrible. I made C's and D's throughout my time in high school, and I knew that I would be drafted, so I just decided to go on and get it over with.
Mm-hmm. Was there any particular reason that you decided to join the Marine Corps?
I was in great shape back then, and I was gung-ho, cocky, and those were the major things, I guess.
Yeah. So what were your parents' reactions to you joining?
My dad thought I was crazy. he thought I should join the Army, which I probably should have, but it was something I felt I needed to do.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any particular feelings about communism and the spread of communism or anything like that?
I wasn't very political back then, as I am today. I went from being not caring one way or another on politics, but when I got older, during Vietnam, I found found out how the politics plays in war, and that made me more liberal. And when I went into college, I was more liberal then. And somewhere along the line, I reached an epiphany through the years and became more conservative. But usually somebody will, through the ages, will become more conservative in their thoughts. And I call it an epiphany.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I can see that. So where did you, do you remember, did you enlist here in Little Rock?
Yes. Yeah. Signed up in, I believe we signed up in the old post office building right by the courthouse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they did our physical there.
Now, did you go down there by yourself?
Yes.
You did? Okay.
I was 18 at the time, so my parents didn't have to sign for me.
Okay, all right. So where did you do boot camp?
San Diego.
Okay.
And from what I hear, they don't even have boot camp there anymore.
Hmm.
And then we did, after 3 months, I guess it was 3 months of boot camp, then you go to Camp Pendleton for your training, and I was just a rifleman, so I just went through the rifleman training.
So what did you think about boot camp?
I was in great shape back then, so it didn't affect me that much. You had people that, the drill instructors back then could beat on you and get away with it, and they would, and one time I didn't knock hard enough, like Gomer Pyle, you know, and at the door, and the drill instructor was from Little Rock, and he was African-American, had gone to Central High, and he knew that I had gone to Central High. Being Caucasian, he didn't think too highly of me.
Yeah.
Well, he hit me with a baseball bat in the stomach, and like I said, I was in great shape, so I just bounced back, and I was okay with it. And after that, he left me alone. Never messed with me again.
Mm-hmm.
But in boot camp, they would try and mentally mess with your mind. We had a guy that was Asian, mm-hmm. and he would they would call him the gook. They were trying to see if he could handle the pressure, and he couldn't. Mm-hmm. He ended up breaking at the point. But we had several people that broke, and they got him out of there with a medical discharge, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about all boot camp.
Yeah. So do you remember when you I know you said you kind of assumed you were going to go to Vietnam. Do you remember when you actually found out?
I think it was, they send you home for, after your training, they'll send you home and for a month almost. And that way you get to say bye to everybody and you won't see them for over a year. And at that point tell you where that you are going to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
They when I came back from visiting my folks, I went back to Camp Pendleton waiting to be sent over, and they offered me a job as a cook. Mm-hmm. And I turned it down because they said I would be eventually sent over to Vietnam anyway, and so I just wanted to get it over with.
So how did you get over to Vietnam?
They flew us commercial. The flight went through Hawaii, and so I got to see Diamond Head for an hour, and then we flew on to Okinawa at that point. But on the flight, we had the guy sitting next to me was the cousin of Waylon Jennings, and he did not want to go. And when we got to Hawaii, he pretended like he was having a heart attack, and they took him off of the airplane and in an ambulance, and we never saw him again, so we don't know what happened.
So was everybody on the plane going to Vietnam?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I can't remember.
And so you went to Hawaii and then Okinawa, and then you went from Okinawa to Vietnam?
Yes.
Yeah.
In Okinawa, you leave your sea bags, all of your personal valuables and stuff, and they claim that they're going to keep them locked up in a place and they'd be safe. Well, they weren't safe. I didn't have much of anything, though, but they did take what they could.
So do you remember where you flew in? Did you fly? I guess you flew into Vietnam.
Yes, Da Nang.
Okay.
And as soon as you get off of the airplane, the heat hits you, and it's just like that. And you're trying to catch your breath. They did have MPs run up on the plane with rifles ready, saying that they would shoot you if you made, if you got out of line anywhere. You stay in line and do what you're told, and we did.
So I'm curious, why do you think that they would do something? I mean, well, had they had problems before that, you know, guys getting out of line or something, that they felt like they had to go to that
extreme?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's kind of interesting. So did you, you landed in Da Nang. Were you in Da Nang for a while?
Or yes, did you go somewhere else? For about 2 or 3 days. And you didn't get to leave the base. You had to stay in a certain area. And but going from the airport to the base that you were at, you got to see a little bit of the people out on the street. And there was a place called Dog Patch that you went through, which was the Vietnamese people. You'd see some prostitutes, and you'd see little kids out on the street using the bathroom. You'd see grown-ups using the bathroom out in the street. It was a different world.
Oh boy, from Little Rock, Arkansas, I bet that was a little shocking or eye-opening, I guess you could say. So, you know, had you been assigned at that point to your unit, or did you know where, which unit you were going to go to, or did
We didn't know until we were being flown to, or I can't remember if I was flown or choppered. I'm sure I was flown, because the my group was I was assigned to Kilo 3-4, 3rd Marine Division, and our rear area was further north, Quang Tri, Dong Ha, in that area, and I stayed there for about 3 days, and that's where you are issued your rifle and your flak jacket and backpacks and stuff like that. But none of it is new stuff. It's just stuff that's been recycled to the newer grunt.
Right. So what would you say that the morale was like at that point with the guys, the new guys coming in?
Well, the, when you're back in the rear, that they don't have any thought of you one way or another. You are to fill a spot right there. So at night, you would have to stand watch out on the perimeter, and that was the only usefulness they had for you at that time. And that was my initiation to to rats out on the perimeters where people would throw their garbage, sea rations and stuff. And when they did, the rats would come and eat them. And in the middle of the night, if it wasn't your watch, you'd be laying down sleeping and on the ground, and rats would come up and, on your chest, and you just grab it and throw it as far as you could, and then you try and get some sleep again. Uh-huh. I never got bit by a rat though. Uh-huh. Some guys out in the bush, when we were out in the bush, if they were getting short time to stay, they would prick themselves with the little can opener that we had to open the sea rations. They would prick themselves somewhere and say they got bit by a rat, and then they would get sent back to the rear area where it was safe, but they would have to get those rabies shots. Uh-huh, uh-huh. And that was in the stomach,
I think. Yeah.
And I couldn't see the value of that.
No, that didn't sound too good.
No.
So do you remember where you were assigned to first?
We were choppered from Quang Tri or Dong Ha to a place called LZ Stud. It's or Vandergrift, and it's a place that is just southeast of Quezon, a few miles from there. And that was the closest rear area that we got to go to whenever we were pulled out of the bush for anything. Mm-hmm. And from there we were choppered to a hill on the DMZ. The DMZ was an area that the North Vietnamese weren't supposed to come down, and we weren't supposed to go in. But we stayed on this hill, and we would go into the DMZ, and the hill was in the southern part of the southern line of the DMZ, and I guess they were getting around it by being legally not in the DMZ, but we really were.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed there for over a month, I think. Mm-hmm. And saw some action there. We would usually see something. Any action could be a firefight, an ambush. It could be mortars coming in, or we would fire mortars. We traveled as a company of men. It wasn't a large company, but I can't remember how many people were on the hill when I got there. Oh, when we did land on the hill, the helicopter, it's not like the Huey helicopters that you see on TV. The Marines are in the long helicopters. I think they call them Sea Knights,
mm-hmm.
Chinooks. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. But anyway, they told us to jump out of the back end of it because they wouldn't land the helicopter completely.
You just kind of hover.
And my first introduction to the bush was they threw us a mailbag out there, and they said land on the mailbag. And I did, and when I did, I landed right between a stump, my legs right between. And I looked to my left, and there were two body bags. Two of our guys were killed, and they were loading them onto the helicopter. So, and
so what were your living conditions like there?
You slept on the ground. The Marines dug trenches. They didn't dig foxholes, or they said they didn't dig foxholes, but you dig what you need to. I wasn't into digging much. I was a slacker on that, and I just felt I'd take my chances. But they had already dug a trench all the way around the top of this hill, and they from different times the top had been blown apart, and there were stumps maybe that high, and you could hide behind a stump if you had to, which I did. We would see action maybe once a month or twice a month. And like I said, it wasn't hand-to-hand combat. Never had to do that. We had way too much power over the enemy on that. What you see on TV, I'm not saying some of those things didn't happen. It just didn't happen where we were. Mm-hmm. And never heard of it happening. Never heard of a place being overrun by the enemy where we were at.
Right. So were you mostly involved with the NVA?
Yes.
Who you went up
against? When, yeah, up in the mountains, when something moves, it's the enemy or an animal, mm-hmm. one of the two. They said that there were rock apes up there that threw things at you from the trees, but we never saw that. I did see a few animals, two snakes, and don't know what kind they were, but up in the mountains I only saw one, and then when I transferred down around Da Nang later on, I did see a bamboo viper, and had to kill it with one of those e-tools, the shovel, and I just killed it. It was in a foxhole.
Oh, wow.
So that's okay. One of the reasons I don't like foxholes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But there's certain things that come to mind that when you got back to the rear area maybe once every other month, maybe every 3 months. And when you get back there, there's a certain smell that you're to this very day, when I smell diesel fuel, I think of safety, mm-hmm. because it permeated the air back in the rear area. And any type of vest, I think of like a flak jacket. Mm-hmm. And so I think of that as something comforting, protecting.
Right.
It's kind of weird.
That's not weird. Not weird at all. So while you were up on the hill, did you guys ever come under attack while you were up there?
Sort of. What we would do is we would go on patrols in from the top of the hill. We'd go down. There was a place we would get water somebody got shot at going to get water. You would send a squad down to get water or go on patrol. And one time I was, I don't know if I should say this or not, but I was on the shitter.
It's okay.
When you're at a spot and you're going to be there for more than like 3 or 4 days, the Marines build a shitter, and it'll be out of thin wood that crates that you would unload the mortar rounds in, and you would make a toilet there. Mm-hmm. Well, I was on that, and when all of a sudden I heard crack, 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 and it was the enemy sound of rifles, but it was off in the distance a little bit. And what had happened was one of the other squads had got walked into an ambush, but the enemy had shot the point man and just shot him in the arm, and he wasn't hurt real bad. But anyway, they told us to saddle up, and here I was in that predicament. And I tried to clean as best I could, and we took off. And while we were out there, they had us get online and go up this hill, and they were shooting at us, and we were shooting at them, and we all got down on the ground, and the machine gunner was next to me, and you don't want to get close to the machine gunner, I found out real quick. Mm-hmm. The shells will shoot over, and they're hot, mm-hmm. and one of them went down my flak jacket and was burning me. So I put my arm up like this to block anything, and his canister of machine gun shells was here, and a bullet hit that canister and ricocheted off.
Wow.
But that was the closest I ever got to being shot. Uh-huh. And we ended up getting two of the enemy that day, and one of them was a Chinese observer.
Hmm.
He was physically bigger than the Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. You could tell that he stood out.
Mm-hmm. So what happened with him?
We took the papers off of both of them and any weapons and took them back up the hill. Was that while we were online going up the hill, I kept smelling something. And I thought it was me and not being clean. And it turned out that it was me, but it wasn't that. It was the adrenaline had caused me to have such bad breath that it was just in my face. And I don't know, you just, different things affect you whenever you're in a situation that kicks in that adrenaline.
Uh-huh. So at that point, you're the new guy, basically, or one of the newer guys.
Yeah, I was supposed to be the point man that day, but for some reason, our sergeant told me, no, wait another day. And the sergeant was very, very intelligent guy. We called him Deputy Dog. And he was from New York, and he was a conscientious objector.
Hmm.
He carried a pistol, but no rounds in it. And he would direct fire, and he could read a map real good. He taught me. Once I got over there, I knew I had to take care of myself. And I could not depend upon my fellow man, because the very first night we were on a listening post, and one of the guys fell asleep that was supposed to be awake, and they came down and from the hill and threw rocks at us to wake us up. Mm-hmm. And the only thing he got in trouble for was he had to pay, they took $50 out of his paycheck, and that was his punishment. Well, we could have been killed.
Right. You know?
So I learned. I learned how to read a map. I could tell a topographical map where water would probably be at on the edge of a hill, so you wouldn't have to go down to the jungle down in the bottom. Mm-hmm. All the time. And I learned to call in mortars so that you wouldn't have to do any close combat, and that helped save the day quite a bit.
Well, appreciate you coming in today and hearing about your service.
Well, you got to hear more than you probably wanted.
No, that's not true at all. Not true at all. I enjoyed hearing all of it. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
You've been listening to Primary Sources on Radio CALS, a production of the Central Arkansas Library System, its Arkansas History Department, the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies, and the CALS Communications and Public Relations Department. For more information, please visit cals.org and butlercenter.org. Our producer is Glenn Whaley. Production manager is Shelley Stormo. Voices by Jasmine Job and John Miller. Engineering and editing by Anna Lancaster and Shelley Stormo.
This is KABF in Little Rock, 88.3, the voice of the people in Central Arkansas.